And it goes a little something like this.
Oof. Last night, they played the Canadian version of the Super Bowl. It was the 100th Grey Cup in Toronto, the home standing Toronto Argonauts against the Calgary Stampeders. Great Roger Doucet, first quarter. Toronto's rookie Raider Chad Owens, MVP of the CFL from Hawaii. 5-yard touchdown, aloha. Second quarter, Kevin Gunn picked up by Pacino Horn. He's going to godfather 25 yards for a 14-3 Argo lead. The crowd going nuts. Halftime, they had it all. 74-year-old Troubadour Gordon Lightfoot to fellow Canadian Justin Bieber, 18-year-old heartthrob. Half a century difference. The Mounties bring the cup out. Celebration in Toronto. They beat Calgary 35-22 in the 100th Grey Cup or the Coupe Grey. The Argonauts are unlikely chance. They were 9-9 in the regular season. But if you're looking for a bottle of Molson's or a bottle of Labatt's in Toronto, better hurry up. They're going to be gone soon.
Okay, welcome to the program, everybody. Holy moly, this has been the most nightmarish few weeks of my life. A matter of moments ago, my wife, you want to come here and tell them what you told me? I'm about to go on the air, and I don't believe what she said to me. What did you say?
The main shut-off valve for the water was leaking.
So she was down there feverishly trying to stop the water from becoming a real serious issue, and I got the show to do. And today, it was running out of the shutoff valve. She was all panicked and all freaking out. And oh my God! I said, "Relax, let me look at it." She goes, "But you got the show to do." And I said, "Don't worry about the show. Don't worry about the show." I was worried about the show, but the problem is something dire was happening. So I went down there and had a look at the situation. And I'm not just an ordinary homeowner. I have some experience in construction. I have some experience in supervising people in construction. And lost my ability to do my job a couple of years ago. And I tried moving on in life. And so we decided today to, the past couple of weeks, to refurbish the kitchen a little bit. You know, new countertop, new floor, new backsplash, thank you. And anyway, decided to do all that. And today the girls were all cross-legged waiting to get the water back on. And it's been an interesting experience. So I apologize, first of all, to those of you that were tuning in and all you heard was dead air after the opening. I assume the opening went on. I was actually fixing the shutoff, which I actually, we're talking the main shutoff, the one that, you know, controls all the water in your house. Fixed that. And believe it or not, in a matter of 5 minutes, fixed it. But I was 2 minutes late to come on the show. So I apologize for that. And it's been like that for the past month. We had our driveway finally asphalted, whichever. And all the while, canceling the odd Candid Frank live show, including one Rouge Radio Candid Frank live last week. It has been a horror story here. Anybody who's done construction, it's much like building a football team. The problem with construction is you're in charge with building a football team. You have a team. It's been an interesting. So by way of whether you want to believe it or not, it's not the important issue to me. That it is the truth, and that's what's going on. And poor Jason is probably having a conniption. And I did send you the link to the show after Monday's show. I made a point of doing it. In fact, I even put that Kent Ridley would be on. Now, he's going to be on a little later, 10:30 instead of 10. There were intentions to do a lot of stuff, but when I say that I haven't had time to sneeze, I have not had time to sneeze. So the last couple of shows, including our Monday Night Argo show, has been one that basically is just from the viewpoint of what I've seen thus far in the season. We can do some of that again today, because I think it's important as a CFL fan to really take note of some important issues. And when Kent comes in, because he has been a GM, he has been a coach, he has been a player, he has been a scout, the issue of the success that the various teams in the CFL who've lost quarterbacks, number one quarterbacks, and the consistent fine play of the replacement quarterbacks, just incredible. Really, I don't remember in recent memory that there have been, because living here in Toronto, we haven't had successful number one quarterbacks, never mind backups. So, you know, and you know, with Hamilton having what they're having, they've got Burris, and it almost looks like they're unhappy with him. So they'll be looking for another guy that maybe might challenge Burris or force Burris to really work a little harder towards, you know, performing in a manner that's more conducive to Kent Austin's happiness and satisfaction. It's a real interesting time in the Canadian Football League with the Ottawa Redblacks on the horizon. Many people have spoken about the fact that the Ottawa Redblacks, of course, have a great opportunity here with all these wonderful young players to really pick a diamond, not so much in the rough, but in the making. And they, in fact, will be able to do that. The only question is going to be, how great will the player be down the road? So that's the key focus for today when Kent comes. We're going to talk about young quarterbacks and young players. And a few weeks ago, we talked to our ESPN buddy, McCoy, and he was telling me how surprised he was at the improvement of the CFL's defenses. Now, having said all that, these young quarterbacks have proven that there's a lot of depth in as far as quarterbacking in the CFL is concerned. You know, earlier this year, at the beginning of the year, I was interested in learning a little bit about why Canadian quarterbacks don't make it. And I think the easiest thing to say is that there isn't any pressure whatsoever on a CFL team to keep a Canadian quarterback around. So that basically means Canadian quarterbacks don't develop. Now, they need a chance to develop. They deserve a chance to develop. And so what the CFL has done is they have this intern program where they involve young high school, well, one was a high school, and college players to come in and train with the CFL team and the CFL quarterbacks. And that's a good first step, but I don't think that that's all that there can be. There needs to be a little more. And eventually there has to be some sort of ratio consideration that needs to be considered. And this may be the best time possible to actually consider it. The reason I say that is that this is the year where the CFL has had an influx of money. Money that's come from TSN where it didn't come before. So there's some talk about adding a player or, you know, raising salaries or a combination of that, you know, altering the ratio in some manner. But maybe this is an opportunity here to bring in a quarterback that's Canadian and give him a chance to play. And I don't see why he can't be included in the ratio. I know the teams don't like that idea because the quarterbacks that come from the U.S. are ready and fine-tuned much more than the Canadian quarterbacks are. But having said that, it is the Canadian Football League. And therefore, I think Canadian football coaches should consider Canadian football quarterbacks and double on the Canadian Football League quarterbacks. But that's neither here nor there. We'll see what happens down the road. Those are a few things that we can talk about today. You're listening to Candid Frank Live on Rouge La Radio. And, of course, the phone number here is 714-242-5250. That's 714-242-5250. Now, more apologies. Once I get my feet back on the ground and I don't have these kinds of disasters that happen at the last minute, we will be talking to this about the CJFL. It is August. The CIS will begin in earnest. So minor league football becomes more of a focus on the football landscape. But as always, the Canadian Football League is the center of our interest. And this week we've seen some developments that are of concern for some teams. And as does happen, you know, a quarter of the way through the season, a little further past that, but, you know, heading towards a third of the season, the issue with coaching. Well, the first coach has been released, and of course, Montreal now being coached by Jim Popp. And, well, he has his hands full. You know, it is a team long in the tooth. It is a team now without Jamal Richardson. It is a team that really has some work to do. And tomorrow, a good gauge will be the game against the Toronto Argonauts. So we'll be able to talk all about that. And at 10:30, that's in 15 minutes from now, we'll give Kent Ridley a call and have him join us on the program. And we hope that you stick along, and hopefully you will also call in at 714-242-5250 if you're listening. And if you've given up on listening because of the dead air, oh well, there you go, right? It is what it is. Once again, my name's Frank. This is Rouge Radio, Candid Frank Live, and this...
Travis.
Travis Lulay.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I love this guy.
He's real.
You know you like him. Loves the outdoors.
He's out there, all out, every game.
You gotta like that.
Look at him.
Always looking to land the big catch.
He's accurate.
Articulate.
He's a winner.
Champion.
He's got a great cup.
He's the real deal.
Yeah, you gotta love this guy.
CFL on TSN. You need to see these guys play.
Don't forget, Mike Richards in the morning. TSN 1050.
1, 2, 3. We're the Argo Cheerleaders, and you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
One, 2, 3.
We're the Argo Cheerleaders, and you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
Yay!
Go Frank! Go Frank!
Go Frank!
There you go, Frank.
Thank you.
It's a legacy 65 years in the making of undefeated seasons and Grey Cup wins. Old records broken and new records made. The players who gave it all on the field to lead our team to victory. Find out what legends will be born this year. Stamps season tickets start at just $139. Get yours at Stampeders.com. Be a part of the ongoing legacy. Stampeders football. Calgary's horsepower.
Well, now, are you sure there's any fish in here at all? Because we haven't latched into one today yet.
Tired of sitting on the sidelines? Want to be part of the game?
Be offensive. Be radical. The CFL is back and more radical than ever. The action never stops. It's hard-hitting, high-scoring football. Get in the game. Wear the attitude.
Come on, go, go, go. Woo!
Be offensive. Be radical. CFL football. Get in the game.
You having a little popcorn?
You're listening to Candid Frank Live, streaming on Rouge Radio. We're the Argos Cheerleaders.
It is a first down for Ottawa. The football at the 24 of Saskatchewan. Clements coming back to throw again. Looking, looking, gets all kinds of protection. Throws into the end zone for Gabriel. Touchdown!
In 1898, the Ottawa Football Club adopted the red and black of the Canadians that fought with Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders in the Spanish-American War. They also adopted the name. Et c'est à partir de ces débuts modestes que le rouge et noir a été associé à la ville d'Ottawa. The Carleton Ravens, Ottawa Fury FC, Ottawa 67s, and the Ottawa Senators have all adopted the colors and built their own history and traditions. Mais le rouge et noir se retrouve d'abord sur les chandails des équipes d'Ottawa dans la LCF. Les couleurs de Russ Jackson et de Tony Gabriel. To all who have worn the red and black. À tous ceux qui ont porté le rouge et noir, who have battled on the gridiron on behalf of our great city et qui se sont battus sur le terrain au nom de notre belle ville. We honor your tradition. Nous préservons votre tradition as we begin to forge our own. Et nous commençons à forger la nôtre. Like the blades that cut timber in the upper Ottawa Valley and the men who rode them down the Ottawa River.
It's from the turning on and off, turning on and off, turning on and off.
We are balanced, dangerous, unstoppable. Nous sommes
the Rouge et Noir d'Ottawa.
Sure.
We are the Ottawa Red Blacks.
All right, success. The better half has noted that the disaster downstairs in the basement has been. So you sure it's not leaking? Okay, good. So after you fix a water leak on a, just a piece of advice for those of you that are out there, if your water, newspaper, anything, paper, dry, right? That'll show immediately if there's even a drip. So far the paper towel test is it's totally dry. I can relax here and think about what I'm doing on the program. We'll remind you that this is a kiss out to Jason Sperling, who's the executive producer of Rouge Radio, and a right hand man here on the program. Unfortunately, he hasn't had the opportunity to meet me in person. You know, we've got to fix that, Jason. You know, I'd like to meet you in person. It's a relationship that we began a while back, and it's been real tough, I got to tell you. Doing something like this over a prolonged period, three nights a week, it has been taxing. But really what has been taxing is there have been some things that have happened in my personal life that have made it difficult. But you know what? I love doing this, and I really enjoy sharing my thoughts on the CFL and sharing an opportunity to interview people and talk with them and give them a chance to be interviewed and to share what they think in a professional and, I believe, wide-open manner, as opposed to, you know, what's your axe? Here's my axe, you know. We like it to flow freely here, and I really do like to get to know the people that we do interview here. Football folks are very special. You know that from listening to me once or twice. You'll know that I believe that. And football fans, albeit in most cities in Canada, are rowdy, fun-loving, get out of their seats, scream and yell. Real wonderful fans. Well, we Argo Lifers are beginning to change that trend on the program. My dinner. By the way, I didn't have dinner either. We had a couple of penalties called against BC by virtue of our loudness, and it paid off. So, yeah, even in Toronto, the excitement is beginning to grow with the CFL. The CFL is making a serious comeback. And even better, and this is the part I really, really, really enjoy, and that is the CFL need not bring along the Vanier Cup or CIS football because the CIS has done well on its own. And this year, in fact, they will not be playing in the same stadium that the Grey Cup is being played in. In fact, they will be playing in Laval. And no better a place to play college football than Laval, where many of the great players who are trained in such a high level come to the CFL ready to play and ready to really make the game better in the CFL. So kudos to them as well in the CIS and in Quebec. Now, we're going to get a chance to look into the Junior Football League, the Canadian Junior Football League, I promise. In fact, maybe what I'm going to do is I might take a trip down there. Since they're in the neighborhood, I should go down there and talk to them in person. It's hard for them to talk at this hour, but unfortunately, this is how I work all my free time. I work my free time towards 10 to 12, three nights a week. Now, gladly, if they're available at night, we'll be able to talk to them live at night. Otherwise, we have to make other arrangements, and those arrangements have to be made with reality in mind, not wishful thinking. So we'll have fun with that. So we've discussed the fact that the Canadian Football League young quarterbacks are you know, are they're over the top. You know, they're off the hook. What are other, some of the other terminology that youngsters use today? Cool. Is that still used? Cool. Dope. Nope. Oh, you were saying nope to cool, not dope to cool. Sick? Yeah, the CFL's real sick. But, you know, take 2 aspirin and call the doctor in the morning, and you'll solve that problem. So, yeah, so Canadian football is in great shape, and we're looking forward to looking into it a little deeper. And I guess one of the other things in the CFL right now that's of high consideration are the new stadiums. What great opportunities are there? The reason I mention that is the Argos don't have a stadium, and but the newest news is they're talking about putting a roof over BMO Field. Now, if they put a roof over BMO Field and that roof looks something like the one in Winnipeg, why couldn't the rest of the stadium look like the one in Winnipeg? Mind you, though, with better sight lines for the media. That'd be my vote. Right now, if you're in the media and you go to a Winnipeg game, as wonderful as that stadium is, you can't watch the whole game. The near sideline is out of view. You cannot see it. And as a play-by-play person, you have to pretty much gauge the reaction of the crowd to understand or believe you know what happened. So, yeah, that's a tough situation for the play-by-play guys in the CFL. How they did that, I don't know. And including they put one of the flagpoles right in the middle, right in front of the media. I don't know if they're trying to say something, if it's sort of a, you know, a little opinion, you know. Possibly that's the reason. Then again, who knows? All right, now I had a chance to catch up to a reporter and talking about the media. The fellow's name is Damian Cox, and he pretty much knows what's going on. While you listen to this, I'm going to have me a salad, which is dinner, and I'm talking, it's 10:30 our time here, p.m. And after this, I'll give our buddy Kent Ridley a call.
Okay, we're with Damian Cox, Bob Stelic's, one of Bob Stelic's friends, who happens to be the brother of another friend of his, Gord Stelic.
Yeah.
No, seriously, okay. Damian Cox here with us. Damian, I see you here at this mock game. What do you hope to glean from this?
Well, I guess it's my first look at the Argos this year, you know. I mean, reigning Grey Cup champions, and of course, within the whole realm of Toronto, and all the teams and everything that's been going on, it's a sort of a chance to catch up and see where they are. There's 83 players here, a lot of the same faces that won the Grey Cup last year and some new ones. So it's sort of a starting point. It's kind of, I was thinking about this on the way here, of, you know, there's always a continuum in the CFL, but with the CFL there's always a brand new start as well, because it's just the nature of the league. So it's a brand new start.
Well, one thing about the CFL is you can turn it around rather quickly. The Argos have proven it, and actually it's been proven over the years. Isn't that really one of the reasons why the game is so interesting in the CFL? It really is, you know, what the NHL tries to, you know, equality between the teams, when in fact they can't achieve it. But in the CFL, they seem to do it year after year.
Well, there's hope every year, every team. And I think that as fans, that's what people like. You know, they want to hope. Now, some teams have been more successful than others, we know that, but there's hope every year. There's parity every year because there's hope. And, you know, it's been an 18-team for a while now, and soon it's going to be a 9-team league, and there's going to be hope in Ottawa again, which I think is exciting for all of us. So yeah, I mean, and at the same time, just because you won the Grey Cup last year doesn't mean you're about to start with a string of Grey Cups. In fact, recent history has shown that to be really, really difficult, which makes the challenge for this year's Argonauts that much greater.
Yeah, they do have a big target on their backs, don't they?
Well, I think the Argonauts always do. You know, they always have a big target on their backs, regardless of whether they've won the previous year or not. But I think this year, you know, the way things went, Ricky Ray, the quarterback, they've got some better-known guys probably than before. So, Yeah, I mean, and in the East, you know, they look like the team that's got it most together right now, which means that Hamilton, Montreal, and Winnipeg are all going to be gunning for them.
Absolutely, and it'll probably be in this year, this past year, I should say, Edmonton crossed over. I think it's even going to be easier for the West to cross over this year because of the three dynamos they have out there.
Well, who knows what's going to happen in the East, though, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
We just don't know. I mean, you know, the thinking is in Montreal with the new coaching staff there that they may be taking a step back, and how long can Anthony Calvillo go on for? Mm-hmm. Winnipeg had a very tough year, but they've got a new stadium, so there's new exciting. Hamilton, your guess is as good as mine, all right? With Ken Austin, they're going to be playing their games in Guelph. They're going to be all over the place. So I think that's part of what makes the 2013 season look kind of interesting.
I guess with Hamilton, the hope is that they identified the problem, and the problem from last year, the major problem, the one that they could put on real easy, was the defense. Mm-hmm. The offense appeared, anyway, to be very functional and very effective. The defense, not so much, and Austin's taken a lot of time this year to steal players from the Argos, BC, and of course Saskatchewan. So he's made some moves, at least on paper, that look like the defense should be better this year in Hamilton.
But personnel's always, you know, always part of it in the Canadian Football League, and certainly with Canadian players, you've got to have them. It's hard to be competitive. You know, Hamilton's changed their personnel so many times in the past decade, yet had similar results all the time. I'm a Hamilton boy, so I always watch
why
them.
I mentioned.
Why I watch them pretty closely. So, you know, there's hope because there are some new people, but, you know, there's something within that organization, I think, that doesn't allow them to do the things they need to do on a consistent basis. And what that is and whether it'll change under Ken Austin or with the new stadium comes in, we're going to see. But, again, like you said before, I mean, you know, there's a chance in every city you can go from worst to first.
With a couple of good moves.
Yeah, and we, you know, they should be able to score, but can they stop anybody?
That's the key. Now, about the fans in Toronto, I'm part of a group. We're called the Argo Lifers, and we're in Section 134B. And our intention is to make a lot more noise than Argo fans have been given credit. But as a reporter, you've been around all the different leagues. How much work do we have to do here to ramp up the excitement in the stands?
You know, the funny thing is about in Toronto, having watched, you know, Argonaut football for, geez, more than 20 years, it's never a question about the people that are there being loud. It's a question of how many people are there. You know, and when they fill the place, Lord knows we've seen it at the Grey Cup or even for a couple of Eastern Finals. It's as loud as any place.
Any place. I was at the Grey Cup last year,
yeah.
And that's the biggest thing I took back, is that it was elbow to elbow. I was in the middle of a bunch of Calgary fans, and I had my little horn, and they kept telling me to put it down.
Yeah.
And it is a real fun thing when you're in a stadium where there's no empty space, because the sound comes so much clearer, and I'm sure you guys can hear it up in the press box too, where it's just an enveloping sound as opposed to you're in a cavern. And it doesn't ramp up the excitement. You're right, when we have less
No, and I mean, that's a challenge. It's always been the challenge in Toronto. And now the challenge is translating the success from last year into getting more fans in the seats. And if you get more fans in the seats, I don't think there's ever a doubt it's going to be loud.
And the experience is a lot better with more fans in the seats. There's some talk that the Rogers Centre is going to go to natural grass. What can you share with us as far as that's concerned and how it may or may not affect the Toronto Argonauts and a location for them to play?
Well, that's what they say. I mean, Paul Beeston, the boss of the Blue Jays, says that's what they're doing. They're going to grass. And I think that'll preclude the Argonauts. Now, what happens from there, I don't know. I mean, look, any of us who love the Canadian Football League would love to have seen a new stadium in Toronto 10 years ago. Howard Sokolowski and David Cinnamon had a great dream. If it had been realized at Varsity Stadium, anyone who's gone past there and seen what they've been able to do now can imagine how great it would have been to have it there.
Okay.
It's unfortunate it didn't work out. You know, it's hard to see them building something now. But, you know, they may have no choice, or they may have to look for somewhere else. So certainly for fans of the Canadian Football League and of the Argonauts, that's a worrisome development if and when it happens for the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays got lots of problems right now. They don't need to worry about that.
No kidding. You know, the thing that jumps out at you is that we have a city hall that doesn't have an appetite for supporting sports in any way or fashion. So if the Argos are in a position where they have nowhere to play, that's going to raise an interesting situation between the public and, of course, the city doing what they want to do, because they won't be able to. Argos will not be able to afford, based on their, you know, their depth of pockets, They're not deep. They're like the guy with deep pockets and short arms.
Yeah.
What solution is there? I guess we'll all have to stay tuned.
You know, I mean, I guess you can look at it from my position as from a sports media point of view, where you want to see them get a new stadium, or you can look at it from a citizen's point of view, where we already paid for a stadium once that they're playing in, and that's now owned by Rogers. So yeah, so I don't know what the answer is. I can't see the public appetite for building it, helping build a new stadium. So, you know what? I don't know what the answer is. Part of the answer may be eventually that David Braley, I would think, is going to sell this team to somebody. And if it's somebody local who can drive the construction of a new stadium, then that's probably the answer.
The answer may very well be that Rogers completes the set.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? And maybe, you know, right now I don't think ownership is treating them too well. But, yeah, I mean, I guess that's a possibility that makes some sense as well. So there's so many variables right now, and we're a couple years away. But it's probably something that the Argonauts have to start thinking about now.
Thanks, Damien.
Okay.
Pleasure, my friend.
All right, no problem. We'll talk again.
Well, there you go. And that's from a little ways back. And, yeah, Damien's a fun guy to have on. You all know who he is. I mean, he shows up in so many places. He's like a bad penny, but a very smart bad penny. And, very, credible and, a brain, good brain when it comes to this, thing they call, sports. Something that we're a part of, I guess, right? All right, we're going to give our buddy, oopsies. Where is he here? I know you sent me an email, buddy, so you know what? I probably have his phone number on my contacts list. Now, Ken Ridley is a guest that we've had on before, and we were going to have him on last week, and then, last week became a crapshoot, incredibly. And, but still, the good news is he's available today, and we'll see if he answers his phone. I love doing it like this. You know what? I could do it the other way, but this is one way of making sure that the phone number actually hooks up, because that's another problem, is that you call people and you get an answering machine, and it looks on the screen as though somebody's picked up the phone, but they actually haven't. And that's almost as embarrassing as anything. So there's the dial tone. That's the first thing that we're looking for. And you're the 18th caller.
Hello.
Hey, Kent. Frank, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Oh, we're doing renovations here. Did a bunch of landscaping work that started almost 2 years ago and started to come to a culmination this very year. And one of the cherries on top was the new asphalt, the widening of the driveway, because the daughter has a car. We have three cars. And welcome to the Southern Ontario place where cars are the only ways to get around. You think it was California or something. And so about 10 minutes before the show started, the girls been waiting all day. I have four daughters, and they've all been sitting there cross-legged waiting to use the bathroom because the water's off, because Dad's working on the kitchen. Turned the water on, and everything was fine in the kitchen. The water main shut-off started leaking.
Oh, no.
And I'm talking 5 minutes before 5 minutes before coming on the air. And my wife says, go do the show. I'll get buckets. I'll bail. And I'm going, no, never mind. I'll look at it. So the show started 2 minutes late because I had to fix it. A little bit of plumbing experience, a little bit of construction experience, and we survived. And anyway, enough about that. So, yeah, that's how I've been.
Well, it's kind of like rebuilding a CFL team.
Yeah. Oh, you've been listening to the show. Except that the people rebuilding CFL teams have more talent than I. So and more knowledge. Kent, it really is. You know, first of all, let me introduce you and help me to introduce yourself to the listeners. You have been a GM. You have been a coach. You have been the only thing you haven't been, other than a player, you've been a player, is an owner. Have you been an owner at all?
No.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, I'm not that fortunate.
So you've had your finger in a lot of pies, and right now, you're a big CFL fan. You've been a scout and such, and you've done combines, and you know, you've had a good ear to the ground as far as the CFL is concerned. Some people suggest that the defenses in the CFL have really improved over the past few years, but also I think the ability to train backup quarterbacks has improved. The quality of the backup quarterbacks, I don't know, has it ever been this good?
This is a pretty good run that they got right now. It's it kind of reminds me a lot of two time periods, one being, say, the early 80s. You had a pretty good run with backups being able to walk through and be the successors to the starters. And then again in the early 90s, there was a great run with backups being very strong and being able to come in and win games for you. But it is a lot stronger this year than it has been, you know, say over in the last 5 years. I would say this would be the strongest year for sure.
Probably mostly based on the fact that there have been more opportunities, and at least in my opinion, higher profile opportunities.
Yeah, having chances to get a little more game experience is definitely a big benefit for these guys. You know, it's such a unique position being the second string quarterback. You know, you're standing on the sideline, you know the playbook inside and out, but you're also a guy who gets, you know, maybe 25% reps during practice, and during that time, a lot of times you're working out with the second team receivers. And all of a sudden you get thrown into the field in the middle of the game using the first string unit for the first time. And, you know, and you're cold on the sideline and expected to pull out a win. And so that's a maddening experience. This year we've had a real run with backup parts.
And it's been a successful run, too.
And it's been successful, yes. They've done very well. Now, we'll see how that goes as the amount of film starts growing on these guys and people kind of start learning what their tendencies are. I'm sure every defensive coach in the league is absolutely scrambling, trying to get information on these guys and figure out their backgrounds a little bit.
And if you're the GM of the Ottawa Red Blacks, you're downright giddy.
Yeah, you totally are. You're also in an interesting situation because all of the scouts for the Red Blacks are currently scattered around the NFL camps, having a view at potential players that might be available to them next year, and so now they're going to have to come back to Canada one of these days and start picking up. You know, picking up their Canadian trail, too.
Now, Kent, how has the year shook out for you so far, in your opinion? What are the surprises and, you know, oh, well, knew that was going to happen. Like, I mean, most of us knew that Saskatchewan was going to come in big.
Yeah, I think we knew that they were going to be good. I don't know if we figured that they'd be undefeated at this point of the year. I thought if there was going to be an undefeated team in the West 6 weeks in, that it probably would be BC instead of Saskatchewan. And I think the other big surprise this year is just what's happening in Montreal and, you know, their lack of success. I thought Dan Hawkins would do a lot better than what their results were this year, too.
Some suggest that Dan Hawkins maybe tried changing too much too quickly.
I've heard the same thing. I've heard that they were expecting him to change 10 to 15% this year, and then grow that for next year. And heard that he changed or kind of did the opposite. And instead of changing 10 to 15%, only kept about 15%. And so I think that may have been his downfall, just trying to do too much too quick.
Yeah, and you know what? It showed early, the frustration. When you get a Calvillo that behaves in a manner that isn't equal to his history, in other words, he was a very patient player before that, and he became very impatient right off the hopper this year.
Yeah, that was very out of character, at least definitely out of character as to, you know, I've had the opportunity to meet Anthony in the past, and, you know, just a quick little thing, but had the chance to observe him as a very gracious person. And his comments there after the first couple of weeks really seemed, it really hit me interesting, you know, as a outsider there, hit me as, you know, something's not totally right there. I couldn't really place where it was going, and I was kind of shocked that Hawkins got the hook after 5 weeks, but you could tell that something was really off there.
How do you feel about here's one of the teams that I figure is a surprise in the future. I think the best team in the final third or even the final half of the season is going to be Edmonton. They appear to be in trouble early, in the sense that, you know, the other three teams in the division are playing very well, and they're not playing as well. Do you see a better fortune for them going into the middle of the season towards the end?
Well, they've got a really tough stretch here ahead of them right now. I believe in their next 5 weeks, they've got the two games against Calgary. Those are going to be, you know, the Labor Day week is always tough, and it's usually a victory to come away with a split, and that could be a tough one to pull off a split this year. I believe they've got Saskatchewan and BC as part of that grouping too, and so if they can come through these next five with showing some improvement compared to their first six here, I think Edmonton's in tough. I hope I'm wrong, but I see them as being a team that last third of the year could be an early version of training camp tryouts instead of being a playoff run for them.
But what does happen many times in that situation is the team plays a lot better because they relax more and have nothing to lose.
There is that aspect to it as well, yeah.
And, you know what I mean? So,
and your character guys in the room stand up and kind of take over. And, you know, nobody likes to lose. And
nope.
And so that's definitely a possibility. That's it's kind of depends on which way the cookie crumbles, you know? You're either going to have that pride step back in and, you know, they string together some wins at the end of the year, or the dysfunction takes over and it's a tough year to have.
I don't think it will. I have a lot of faith in their coaching staff. I happen to think that they're a very patient group. They have some really good young talent, and they have a great opportunity, really a great opportunity to play against some tough teams to create some, you know, character building. And on your point, as far as, you know, the wheels falling off are concerned, I happen to believe and think that, you know, the biggest difficulty for a player and, you know, especially experienced players is the appearance of losing willingly. The biggest thing a veteran wants to see is that he's on a team that refuses to lose. And if they lose and they did the best they could, it's a lot easier to stomach because you know that that's one step in the right direction.
Yeah, it is an interesting thing, and to tie in Bill Parcells in his induction speech there, heading into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you know, one of his great comments there was, you know, he's coached everybody, he's coached people of, you know, white, black, Native American. You know, he's coached everything, and he said the number one thing that it all boiled down to was, are you here to help, or or is it all about you? And if it's all about you, get out of the locker room. And if you're here to help, you know, come on in. And I found those comments really interesting, you know, coming from a man who's, you know, been kind of noted as being a tough coach to play under at times, and an innovator for sure, but a guy that, you know, that rubbed some people over the course of his coaching career. You know, maybe he rubbed some people the wrong way, but definitely one of those guys that got results. And it's neat to see that, you know, the trademark to his whole coaching philosophy was, are you here to help or are you here not to? And there's a lot of football players that kind of fall into that realm that, you know, we're here, you know, there's 42 of us on the field, and we're all trying to get that win. And as long as they see it, that it's not, you know, people quitting on plays. And, you know, I'd be more worried in Edmonton if that's what I was seeing, you know, players giving up on passes. But they seem to believe in Mike Riley a lot and, you know, willing to make plays. That touchdown catch by Marcus Henry there is a prime example of, you know, if he'd given up on it, he's not putting his body through that kind of punishment to catch a pass. But, you know, he was fighting to make a play, and that's a great sign.
Yeah, you know, there are terms. There's a term that's used from time to time, a phrase called that people use, lovable loser. It's not heard often a lovable winner. So a Parcell-type mentality, of course he's not loved. Of course he's not liked because he's about winning. And let's be honest, winning breeds jealousy, and jealousy breeds, you know, negative comments that don't matter if you're a winner and you put them beside, you know, set them aside. So, yeah, it's tough to be a winner, but, you know, being a winner is something that everybody aspires to. But sometimes, you know, you've got to be willing to win. You know, it's not just about winning. It's about being willing to win. And
yeah.
simply, I mean, you know, it's not as hard as you think, but it's not as easy either. So, you know, there has to be the intent to win, and you have to want to win. You have to want it for yourself. And when I say for yourself, I mean for your team. You're right. I mean, you know, like they say, there's no, what is it? Well, there is a me in team, isn't there? Yeah, I think there is.
There is.
Yeah, there is. There is a me in team. There's no I in team, though, right?
It's interesting. I had this discussion with my kids today, you know, just actually a couple minutes ago, and they were saying, you know, how come you like this sport and how come you like that sport, and you know, it's way more fun to play sports when you're winning. And kind of the conclusion that they came to, well, if winning was easy, then everybody would do it. And so they're kind of already in that mentality of, you know, winning's hard, or playing football is a hard thing to do, and you got to put in your time. My poor son this last year playing flag football down in Tennessee, you know, he went the whole season without winning a game. But he had a lot of fun and he learned a lot of things, and he can't wait until season starts here in a month. And he's amped about it. And it's something that was kind of instilling in these guys at an early age down here.
Yeah. Well, you know, being where you are, you're in Nashville, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You're in Nashville, and, you know, that's, it is the South. And it is country town.
Yeah, you betcha.
Over there. And the South is known for its football and love of football from high school right up through the college and the pros. Now tell us a little bit about, share that with us. How difficult and how taxing is it to be a dad of a football player in the United States? And then you can flip it and let us know how it compares to being a dad, and I guess you've been in Edmonton, so you know what it's like there.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's and I've kind of come across it this last year or so, and you know, I'd love to just put a bunch of Canadian football fans, throw them in a bus, bring them down here for a weekend, and show them around. at some of the things that are going on down here, and then send them back with football fever and have it just spread like wildfire in Canada. That's what I'd love to do. I went through the schedule here this afternoon for some friends back north. They were wondering, you know, what week should we come down? Because, you know, we'd like to catch as many games as we can. And so we've got one weekend here in Nashville where all three of our Division I NCAA schools are playing home games, plus the Titans are playing at home. And so if you could move quick enough, you could catch four games that week, that weekend, and then probably tack on at least one high school game Friday and probably another high school game on Thursday that week. And just to see the fever that kind of takes over as soon as those lights go on. It's very unique. I was at a middle school football game where the visiting school brings their cheerleaders and the home school brings out their band for a middle school game. And, you know, it's tough, you know, to take that and then go back to Canada where that kind of crowd and that kind of energy in the crowd just isn't there for our high school kids. And I'd love to have that kind of support there for them.
Now, it's kind of hard it's kind of hard to expect that football is going to be loved as much as it is in the United States here in Canada when you consider history and I'm sure the competitive nature of all the different communities in the United States when it comes to football may even outshine how we feel about hockey. But whether it does or whether I'm not saying it does, I'm just saying it is kind of hard to develop that kind of passion. But don't you think the problem in Canada when it comes to football is that it seems as though the passion can't be sustained? There are times when it seems though the passion is high. Like right now, the CFL is in an upswing right now, and college football, thanks to Quebec and some other great communities, is very popular in Canada. How do they build on it, in your opinion? Like you said, bring these people down, bus, and show them what it's like. But how can you build on something that ebbs and flows as much as Canadian football does at different levels?
Well, I think in Canada, one of the big things is staying in the public eye because the off season is so long. That's kind of the biggest thing I see is that you've got this huge stretch from the end of November all the way until July before you're playing games again that mean something. And that's such a huge chunk of time. And in Canada, because of the weather situation and all that kind of stuff, we're really trying to pack in so much into a few short months. And you know what? I actually see a lot of similarities in with lacrosse and football as to the fan base and how that goes. You have lacrosse happens. I've worked with some senior men's lacrosse teams, and they'll be promoting a game, and they can get flies for attendance. But the problem is that all the other people that love lacrosse, they're all coaching and their kids are playing games all at the same time of the year. There's no there's no real overlap. What you find down here is, the season, you know, having 16 games for the pros down here, it's a little easier because they play on Sundays and nobody else does. But the other thing that really comes across is that once everybody's season is done, the NFL season is still going. And so then all of that attention and all of that, you know, the love that you built over the course of your season, that focus then turns on to the pro game. And then for that last, you know, month and a half of the regular season and then the playoffs, they're the only thing really going outside of some bowl games there around New Year's. And that's something that I think the CFL is constantly battling. You've got, you know, your OVFL, Their playoffs are going this weekend. I think it's their final game this weekend in Ontario. So there's probably going to be maybe more focus on that than, say, going to an Argos or a Ticats game this weekend. And so you got situations like that where your kids are still playing and your fans end up going, okay, I just spent four nights this week at practice. Saturday's our game. I'm going to watch this game. I love football, but I'm going to watch it on TV. I'm not going to, you know, I can't be out of the house another night. And I think that cuts into it. I know one of the slights against the fan base in Toronto is that weekend happens and everybody heads to the cottage. But I think it's more the weekend happens and everybody's burnt out. And it's just easier to sit at home and watch on TSN and yell at Glenn Suter on TV instead of, you know, going to the game.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not going to disagree with you on that score. We talk about it on Monday night every week because we do our Argo show there. And the biggest thing that we try promoting is, you know, the experience of being at the game. You know, the passion that you can witness and be a part of. You know, it's what you create, you know, that makes it interesting. You know, even the NFL has, you know, their tailgate parties and such. You know, they have their giant lead-in shows, you know, where they build up the hype for each and every day. So, yeah, it is, you know, the NFL is a confluence of everything else that happens. And it becomes the focal point because everything builds up to the Super Bowl. You know, and everything gets out of the way when the Super Bowl's there, right? Even the TV shows there in the U.S. Either they become part of the Super Bowl, or they completely bow out and give up and put reruns in.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, like it's a Wednesday night, and I don't get the TSN version of SportsCenter anymore, but I'm gonna guess, you know, just from past history that there were more stories on TSN tonight about the World Juniors training camp thing going on than there was about the football game tomorrow night.
Yeah, you know, my beef with TSN, but they're hit and miss. They're not consistently bad. All right, they aren't consistently good, and they aren't consistently bad. For the most part, they're better rather than worse. But the part that I don't like, I'll be honest with you, as a CFL fan. TSN does their one-hour show, and literally the second half hour is basically just a repeat of the first half hour. But they don't put it. A lot of times they don't put anything on the CFL in the first half hour, and then they fit it in the second half hour, if you know what I mean. So yeah, they don't get the kind of attention that you would hope they would get based on being the league that TSN is selling. You know.
Yeah.
That's the irony.
And as soon as the game ends, they go right into a sports center. There's no post game analysis. There's no breakdown of the game. You know, there's that little clip in sports center where the desk gets to talk again, but they don't really have that wind down after the game that you see with kind of the NFL product. What they do, it's you know, there's always a, you know, a point of something to bring up and to mention at the end of the game, and we're already moving on to the next thing in Canada. You know, and I mean, there's a ton of reasons in there and a ton of stories and probably, you know, a whole series of radio shows to do on it. But you know, kind of one of your big differences when you cross that border is as soon as you get down into the States and especially into the South, you are seeing football on TV six nights a week. And so it just gets so ingrained in you. You know, you're watching an out-of-state football game on Wednesday. You're watching in-state football games, high school football games on Thursday and Friday. And then you've got this focus on the college game all weekend. And then you got the pro game. In Canada, you know, you've got four CFL games, and once the season's in full swing, you know, you've got four CIS games being broadcast, and you know, maybe you don't get four, depending on which region you happen to live in. You know, your wishful thinking to try to get four CIS games, and your high school guys, you know, they get next to nothing for coverage. You know, some newspapers don't even run the scores anymore, and so it's such a missed opportunity there. You know, from the viewpoint of a football fan, from the viewpoint of the media, I understand their reasons. You know, the resources needed, and you know, maybe the demand isn't there for it at this point in time. From a football fan, I'd love to see the opportunity to have it offered and have that demand grow, because I believe it would. You know, people don't understand, but that CIS game, it's so underrated in Canada. And the football isn't bad. The football's pretty good. And, you know, it should be presented a little more as that quality, a quality game at a amazing price. For the price of one ticket to a CFL game, you're taking your whole family of four and probably buying hot dogs still. So I would encourage anybody listening, find a CIS game and get out there.
Let's talk a little bit about the CIS. It's they've had a great couple of years, and in Quebec, they've really done a great job of developing talent there. What are some of the other places where talent is really starting to come out?
You've got a great program there in Toronto's backyard at St. Andrews. Fantastic program that's putting out some great talent that people are taking notice of. You know, Chris Merchant getting his scholarship to Buffalo, and Peter Godber last year getting his scholarship to Rice. There's a lot of great talent there. You've got some amazing talent coming out of Ottawa. Some fantastic kids there that are doing a lot of speed work is going on out there. It's great to watch. Interestingly enough, this year's Football Canada Cup, one of the All-Stars came out of the six-man football leagues that are playing in Saskatchewan. So there's talent across the country. It's fantastic right now.
And now, as far as how to grow the game, you're talking about the six-man. There are a lot of places that are changing football slightly to accommodate its growth. And the six-man is one way of doing it, where some communities can't put together a whole team, but can put together a six-man team.
Yeah, and the six-man game has grown quite a bit here this last little bit. Saskatchewan has two different levels of six-man football. They've got, depending on school sizes, Alberta has a really large six-man league that they've got. And there's also some six-man football being played up in northern Quebec and a few communities like that. In Alberta, if you take Fort McMurray, what they used to do is they used to combine the four high schools and make one traveling football team that would trek down that terrible highway and play play against those northern schools, and now they've switched over into the six-man game and had all four schools create their own teams instead of a shared situation, and kind of created their own division up there, and that's going to really grow the game. And I see that as being a huge positive. There's more players playing under the six-man rules than there was with the one team playing under the 12-man rules.
And the excitement of participation and, you know, loyalty to your team, not that you don't want to be friends with the opposition or other schools, it just helps to have, you know, to have your own team.
Yeah, it really does. It's, you know, there are a few situations in Alberta where you've got kind of conjoined teams, you know, from two schools being close. In some of the urban centers, forming one team instead of two. But yeah, these schools that are going to the six-man game there in Fort McMurray, and you know, it is one of these things. Like Edmonton's moving their preseason game there in 2015, and that's only going to bolster this. The Fort McMurray football scene is going to, you know, explode over these next 2 years, and I'm really looking forward to what comes out of there.
And hopefully, the powers that be will help enhance that new emotion and that new passion, and not do anything that could be a detriment to it growing. Because that becomes always part of the problem. The hardest part is building something from nothing. Because when you start to get some sort of semblance of development, selfishness seems to take over sometimes, and personal interest seems to take over. Hopefully that doesn't happen, and people can think about the game. Really, football really needs that to grow, where the game is more important than anything else, you know. And that six-man thing that you were talking about is a perfect example. There's nothing wrong with all the schools getting together to work together, but it makes things a lot easier if we all have our own team to cheer for and to be a part of. It makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
And we need to foster that more.
And when you talk about, you know, one of the differences between, you know, even just sports in general between the U.S. and Canada, in some of these places, especially, you know, getting a little more east than west, you end up with these cities, and you'll have, you know, three or four generations of that same family has all gone to that school. And you've got such a connection to this, to that school.
Absolutely.
You know, I really see that as being a major drawing point too. You know, we have tailgates before our high school football games here, and it's not just the families and the people of current students. It's alumni coming back, and each game is like a little mini high school reunion. And in Canada, you kind of get this, you know, you have that tie to your school, but it's not as strong as it could be, you know. Everybody's got a little bit of that pride there. You know, I've taken some of my old high school friends, and we've gone back to see our old high school play. But, you know, the teachers are different, kind of a different feel. But, you know, it would be nice if there was a little more attachment to your school, you know, that whole, you know, playing for the name on the front of the jersey kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And remembering that name.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Kent, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to take a couple of minutes to promote Friday's show, where I'm going to be having a country singer on the program, and you know a little bit about her.
Yeah, I might have seen her a time or two.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Candid Frank Live on Rouge Radio, and my guest is Kent Ridley, player, coach, GM, you name it, he's done it. And if you can't name it, he'll name it for you. And bear in mind also, he's part of Ridley Scouting. And there are a lot of things that he does in regards to football, like hold camps, and of course his own combines. And there have been a lot of great and wonderful experiences had by many a football player who's been included in his experience and under his purview. So when we come back after the show, oh, you know what? We're going to talk to Liam and Bill Howe. You talk about fans. These are fans.
It was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
It certainly was.
Now, review for us last year and how you were on that emotional roller coaster, in your own words, that was the last season, the 100th season of the Grey Cup.
Well, we started off a little slow at home, and the offense took a while to get underway, but they sure came along well, and they exceptional coaching, I think, made some big decisions. Bringing Cackard in, and I guess resting Ricky Ray for a month, it really paid off. We had an awful lot of fun. We traveled with the team. Like, we went to Hamilton. Big game in Hamilton at Labor Day. And we knew Liam and I agreed that Montreal, we had to be there. We thought there was a chance for destiny, and we were right.
Yep.
And at home, it was nice to pay Calgary back for 1971. I'm still recovering for the 1971 game with the act of God and Leon McQuay slipping on the 12-yard line.
But I've been reminded, and you know, don't feel so bad about that play because they had the ball two more times and didn't do anything with it, remember? They kicked the ball and it went out of bounds. Yeah.
Harry Abox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so there were a lot of reasons why they didn't win that game. It wasn't just that play. I guess I'm just trying to give Leon McQuay a little break, you know?
Well, I was talking to Bill Simons about that game just last year and Dave Ramey as well, and I don't think they got over it either.
Nobody will. No. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Frank.
We crossed paths quite a few times last year. We crossed paths at the game, at the Dundas Square, Olympic Stadium, not to mention the Rogers Centre. We were busy hanging out together. How'd you like last year?
I loved it. It was a great experience watching the Argos, and I hope we do the same winning the Grey Cup this year, too.
How are you liking the mock game so far?
Well, pretty good. Haven't watched totally all of it, but doing pretty well. I think some rookies could really show up.
They make the team better. That's the important thing. Now, how'd you like your trip to Montreal and the Big O? Was that your first time there to watch a football game?
No, it wasn't. It was my second time. A better score line than the last time.
Gee, why would that be?
Well,
because the Argos won.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be a good reason. Yeah. Now, was your heart in your throat like it was for me when that last pass at the end of the game, that last gas pass where Montreal had the ball in the end zone, hit the numbers, and didn't stay in the hands of the receiver? Were you relieved or what?
I was. I thought we were going to overtime for sure, but as soon as he let go of the ball, it was all... amazing, and...
Some of the fans even cried.
I heard.
Thank you, Liam.
Hey, you're welcome.
Okay.
Now, that was Liam Howe. Liam is a big Argo fan, and one of the younger players that is becoming a big part of the excitement that Kent is referring to. Now that excitement, in our case here in Toronto, we have a lot of players to cheer for. We have a lot of great players to cheer for. So it's not hard to be really happy about cheering. Now, what does one do when they have a team that isn't as good? When you look at football in the United States, it's not so much about winning. It's more about participation. And as Kent, you mentioned before the break, and we'll get on to our country singer after we conclude that thought that you were talking about. The dedication that people have to their game and their team and their high school, but it does span generations, like you said. You know, we're talking grandfather, dad, and son.
Yeah, there is more of that. I've seen some interesting situations. Sitting in the stands and you meet people and, you know, they've had years and years of connections with that school and, you know, you just know that the next generation, that's where they're going to end up going as well.
Now, we did send a little teaser out there talking about a country singer that you may be aware of. Tell us a little bit about her and, I understand it's a big reason why you're in Nashville right now.
She is, yes, definitely. Jessica Ridley grew up in small town Alberta, just north of Calgary, and you know it's now not quite as small a town. We were back up there this summer, and the place is a whole lot busier than it was even when I first moved there, and it's grown up quite a bit, but in places like Airdrie have been kind of the sleepy little towns, and they've kind of turned into cities while we weren't watching. But she's grown up in Alberta, grown up listening to country music, You know, and a few years ago, you know, coming up to 7 years here now, we started this trek towards, you know, pursuing music on a little more professional level. And we've got one full-length album under our belts, and currently right now we're working on putting together a new six-song EP, and we've got one song on Canadian radio right now. So if you're a country music fan, call in and request The Highway everywhere you go. We've got a great network of fans that have been pushing this song along. It's been really fun to watch.
And she'll be on the program on Friday here, and we're looking forward to talking to her. And, of course, playing some of her music.
Yes, definitely. She's had a few songs do really well over in Europe and things, and I'm looking forward to seeing how she wows you with her football knowledge.
There you go. We'll do. Is she a Ticat fan?
She's not a Ticat fan. She grew up in a household that was a staunch Dallas Cowboys fans.
That was my team when I was growing up, was what it was
all about. And so she's got more Cowboys jerseys in her closet than I do. That's for sure.
Yeah, that was my team growing up. My NFL team growing up, and it was mostly because of the cheerleaders.
I'm sure those cheerleaders have won more than a few people over.
Probably more male fans
over, but.
Well, I'll be 60 next year, and trust me, going back, I got to see them in their heyday on Love Boat and all that, when they brought cheerleading to the forefront in football. They really did.
Yeah, that is for sure. They kind of changed that whole aspect of the game.
They sure did. All right, so we look forward to meeting Jessica on Friday, and I hope you folks that are tuning in now, we'll talk a little bit of football, and apparently we're going to talk a little bit of Dallas Cowboys. She's not as old as I am. I go back to Roger Staubach and company. You know,
she's more of an Aikman kind of fan.
There you go. And he has some experience with country singers.
That's true, too.
A little experience. All right. So, you know, we're down to about the last 22 minutes of the show. And maybe from a faraway perspective, this year we've talked about the fact that Saskatchewan is not a surprise. We've talked about Edmonton is rebuilding. You know, we talk about the Argos here a lot, but, you know, we could touch on them a little bit. We talked about Montreal, a lot of surprises. So to finish off the East, Hamilton, I predicted last week that Burris would be sitting on the bench within 3 weeks. I guess it happened a little sooner than I predicted, but he's still, you know, in the mix. Don't get me wrong. How hard is it for a coach to come in who's also a GM and he has a quarterback that maybe he hopes will buy into his system, but in fact he may not? And what happens when it starts to look like he can't work the system you're trying to develop?
It's an interesting situation there in Hamilton, because you've got a brand new coach coming in, who's a former quarterback that won in this league, understands the league very well, has won as a coach and as a player, and so he comes in replacing a coach that produced the best statistical season of Henry Burris's career, and you know, that's a major shift there when you've got an offense that was clicking like the Ticats were last year. You know, it's not a regular thing to see the highest scoring team in the league miss the playoffs. And, it, you know, offense, Hamilton was on par with everything. The problem was they couldn't shut the door and keep anybody out of the end zone. And And so that was kind of a major, you know, swing and a miss on that side. But it would have been a very intensive transition period there for Kendall Austin to come in and, you know, because the offense wasn't broke. You know, that part of the game didn't really need the tailoring the defense did. And yet he probably still wanted to run his own systems instead of George Cortez's. And Cortez is kind of a little more patient of a coach. He likes to feel the opposition out for the first quarter and call a really conservative game, whereas Kent Austin is a little more bold out of the gate, you know, a little different coaching mentality and philosophy there. And then you throw in the fact that your quarterback, he's not exactly a spring chicken. And on one side, you know, Burris being 38 years old, that's probably got to play into it a little bit. But on the other side, it's not like he had a bad year last year. And he also knows the defenses. He knows the CFL game. He's not new to that situation. And it might have been, you know, maybe in hindsight it might have been better if they had kind of created this Dan LeFevre package and ran with that starting earlier in the season, you know, taking a series or maybe two series a game where LeFevre comes out and does something completely different. You know, maybe that would have been more advantageous to do something like that earlier on and let Burris play his game for the majority of the game, but then throw in this wrinkle that's a little more Kent Austin ball than what Burris was doing. And you know, I can only imagine what those meetings are like. It appears like they're all kind of gelling and they're on the same page. They just can't quite get it done. But, you know, that when you have an offense, you know, Burris the other week, a couple weeks ago, when he threw for almost 400 yards, but they still lost the game, that to me is something kind of showing the same cracks that they had last year. The offense is clicking, but the defense isn't quite up to par.
Yeah, and you know, it's tough emotionally. They even if they won't admit it, that this is a rebuilding year for them, it really isn't a conducive year to actually making giant strides when your home games aren't even in your home city.
Yeah, and distractions like that, you know, they're probably not admitting that things are, you know, getting to them a little bit. But yeah, playing out of town. The whole Chris Williams debacle, the whole, you know, so much focus being put on, you know, the branding and the building of new Ira Wynn, you know, they may not be kind of publicly admitting that they're distractions, but they only could be. You know, you've got the one kind of saving grace in it is that you're CFL mandated practices are shorter than say like for an NFL team, and so it's not quite as much time consuming. But you're still requiring these guys to make some personal appearances back in Hamilton. You know, you've got some guys that they've got their programs, their charities, and things that they're running. Those are all operating in Hamilton, so there's constant movement back and forth. You know, at least they haven't used it as a public excuse, but it must be wearing on them at least a little bit privately.
On the other hand, then you've got the Toronto Argonauts who win the Grey Cup last year, and they have the same kind of issue, but much further on the back burner. It's on the back burner. That is where they'll be playing. Not a question of playing elsewhere at this time, but playing elsewhere soon. But still, the team won the Grey Cup last year. Are you surprised at how they've divested themselves of so much defensive experience and still came up with a great defensive game against BC?
You know, I'm not totally surprised about it. I think kind of that little run here since last offseason, I think it has all the trademarks of Chris Jones putting more of his stamp onto that team than even he had last year. Last year, he ended up with a bunch of players that bought into his system, and away they went. They had that great run at the end of the year and carried that through. And I think that kind of mentality is there right from the beginning this year. I think they've got players that kind of fit what he wants to do. One of his kind of, you know, maybe failing points in Calgary was here he was switching up a defense, and it didn't look like a traditional Calgary Stampeders defense. The Stampeders always had big defensive ends that always went forward, and a middle linebacker that crashed through the line, and Chris Jones threw a lot more wrinkles in there that maybe weren't as received as well by the fans for what they were. And here he goes to Toronto, and I think he's kind of put his trademark into that team right now. They're going to be an interesting one to watch these next few weeks and heading through Labor Day. I'm going to be very, very interested to see where they sit by that point in time.
Joining us now, Mike. You there, Mike?
Yep. Hello.
Hey, Mike. It's Frank.
Hey,
we just with Kent Ridley. You're listening to Candid Frank Live, streamed on Rouge Radio. Mike, one of our great guests, I don't even consider him a guest. I consider him one of the guys on the show all the time. Kent, Kent has been a scout, a GM, a coach. So introductions to both of you if it isn't the first time that you've been on together. Mike, we talked about the East. We'll move to the West, but I'm sure you have something you want to add at this point.
No, go ahead. I'll just...
You sure? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you can add your comments to it. So we talked about Edmonton being a team that hopefully with a little patience they will develop, and I believe that the end of the year they're gonna play really well towards the end of the year, or at least better than they've been playing. Now we all know that Winnipeg's in the Eastern Division. Next year they'll be in the Western Division again, so they should have their eyes on what's going on here in the Western Division as well. Calgary to me, they're the team. They're the team to worry about as far as I'm concerned. If you're in the West, you won't want to play them in the Western Final, and you won't want to play them in the elimination game. I think Calgary's they're the sleeper in the Western Division. What do you think, Kent?
They're kind of a team, one of these teams that they have to prove themselves here these next, I'd say the next 3 weeks, going up against Saskatchewan, BC, and Toronto all in a row. They've kind of been able to get a couple, you know, maybe not so hard fought wins. They didn't look great against Montreal the first time, and kind of squeaked away with that one. They beat on poor Winnipeg, and so they'll be interesting. I think the next 3 weeks kind of proves if they're for real or if they're going to need to do some retooling down the stretch.
And BC, what, you know, great defense, and they looked an offense. They did not look good against the Argos. They got that taste out of their mouth winning this week.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see a lot more of Lule moving around a little bit more. They pulled off a couple plays there in that fourth quarter that offense threw some misdirection stuff in there that nobody was really 100% sure where that ball was. And I think you're going to see that a little more. I think Lule's got to move around a little bit more if kind of prove his worth on his feet. He's how that team goes. If he continues building here, I think they're going to be tough not to be hosting that West Final.
Yeah, they look like a tough team. They should be in there, but like I said, Calgary to me is just a sleeper. They could surprise. Mike, your input.
Yeah, I guess when it comes to Travis Lule, particularly with the Lions, what he's going through is what I think is similar to what Durant went through back in 2010 and 2011, where he kind of took the league by storm in 2011. But since then, if you've noticed, defenses have started to figure him out more and more. and that's why you're starting to see more inconsistency from their offense, especially in the passing game. He really doesn't have that many 300-yard games anymore. If you notice, he averages around 250. And I think he's a great quarterback, but it's just a matter of him going through that phase of where the defense, all the defenses adjust to you, and then you have to have another counter to that, and that's when you can become a great quarterback. So he's just going through that phase. But to your point, all this talk about Calgary, BC, it's all irrelevant because there's no question, in my opinion, that the Saskatchewan Rough Riders will be in the Grey Cup. That's a guarantee. You look at them talent-wise, their depth, it's no one else is close to them. That's why Calgary, when we watched that game in Saskatchewan a couple of weeks ago, the first half they were more than able to hold their own. But by the time the fourth quarter hit, they just were completely defeated. Why? Because they don't have the depth to be able to keep up the way the Riders are able to rotate guys, bring a guy in. I mean, their defensive line is almost like six or seven deep, you know, and it's just, we're, you know, Calgary, they could challenge them, but let's be honest. If the Riders can make it to that number one seed and they host that West Final, we know there's going to be 40,000-plus at Mosaic. The chances of either BC or Calgary going in there and winning, I think, is slim to none. So I think no matter what, we're looking at a Toronto-Saskatchewan Grey Cup, period. And that's what I'm looking forward to. That's going to be a great game. I think the Argos could go in there and win, but Calgary and BC are both they're still just, you know, the Riders are still head and shoulders above them, so that's my take on the West.
Kent, is it that cut and dried for Saskatchewan?
I don't think it's that cut and dry. You got Saskatchewan; they're rolling well. They got Corey Sheets running up a storm, and Cortez. They're creating a great offensive game plan, but really they've got a schedule there that's kind of been a benefit. You know, playing Hamilton twice, playing Edmonton already once. They kind of had the three not quite as tough games as what maybe everybody else had. I like their offense that they've got going on there. I'm not sure that Corey Sheets can keep up the pace that he's on, that's for sure. You know, he's on pace for over 2,000 yards. That's going to be a tough one towards the end of the year to keep that up. But it is definitely, I think this is kind of the resurgent year for Darian Durant, and it's going to be kind of his, probably his calling card, and a great move there with Saskatchewan picking up Cortez as coordinator.
Okay, so yeah. Ken, let me ask you this then. This is for you too, Frank. Can you guys point out any position, right, whether it be quarterback, running back, offensive line, receivers, same goals on the defense, can you show me any position that Calgary or BC are better at than the Riders? Like, is there any? Because I don't see a single one.
Go ahead, Ken.
I'm going to say that BC has a better secondary.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, when you take a look at some of these guys that BC continues to throw out there, I don't know if you can top a group that contains, you know, Corey Banks and those guys, and then you get a newcomer coming in, Cord Park there, that's made more than a few plays already this year as a rookie. BC's secondary, to me, is generally they're the guys that I compare everybody else to when it comes to the defensive backs.
So other than that, do you see anything else?
I would say when they're running their 3-4 defense, when you got the middle containing Adam Big Hill and Solomon, yeah, Big Solomon, those two guys are two linebackers that I'd build my team around as well. Fantastic individuals. You know, I'm not taking, you know, too much away from what Saskatchewan's putting on the field. You know, don't hear me saying that. They're definitely a very strong team, and you don't shut out a team in the CFL, regardless who they are, unless you've got a good defense. But when it comes to those guys in D.C., I give the nod to their defense.
But we've already seen, like, that get exposed. For example, Big Hill and Aluminium, they're nice linebackers, but honestly, in the CFL, it's almost irrelevant. You don't want power, you know, they're basically run stoppers, more or less. They can play coverage, but their coverage skills aren't that great. And they got exposed last year in the West Final against Calgary. You saw how Calgary was able to move the ball almost at will, passing the game. And when they played Calgary in the beginning of the season, we saw the same issue, which is their defense is predicated on getting some type of pressure on the quarterback, and then thus their secondary will be in a position to make a play. But the more and more we've seen it, I mean, Big Hill and Aluminium together, that just it doesn't work. Because they're both run stoppers. They're both, neither one are, can play that well in space, and that's why we saw them get exposed against Toronto. And if you have a good offense that has a good offensive coordinator like Cortez or Milanovic or, you know, John Huffnagel, you can expose that, and it's been done repeatedly. And I think ultimately the Lions, they're going to be headed for that third seed. They're not going to catch Calgary. They're definitely not going to get the number one, and they're going to lose in the West semifinal to Calgary. I'm willing to bet my house on that. And you know, I'm just, you can see it. Like, you brought up Dante Marsh, Corey Banks. Those are great guys, but they've both been in the league, like, almost a decade. You know what I'm saying? They've clearly lost a step. They can tackle, but they're not keeping up
on the field, though.
Yeah, I mean, just because the guy's smart doesn't necessarily, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's nice to have one of those guys. You can't have four guys out there that, you know, are approaching they're close to their mid-30s. I mean, come on. I mean, if you're playing, like, let's say you had a safety like a Jordan Younger, like the Argos had, that's fine. Because safeties, you don't need them to play man-on-man and be able to keep step-for-step with the receiver down the field. That's fine. If they can just sit there and play zone, that's great. But those guys are expected to play man-on-man. We saw what the Argos did to them. John Childs, Jason Barnes, they were just more athletic because those guys are old.
Mike, you know, I can't argue what you're saying at all. At the end of it all, when it all shakes out, experience is wonderful. But one thing that Chris Jones has proven that youth can overcome in experience, youth and excitement and desire. But still, one has to give a bit of respect for BC. And I think I think the next few weeks, you know, the first few weeks, everybody's surprising everybody else, or they're building what they're hoping will be the team they have, believe it or not, for the playoffs. And I'm not trying to, and I don't want to sound disingenuous when I say this, I'm not trying to tear down the regular season in the CFL, but let's be honest, guys. The CFL is all about playing in the playoffs and winning the Grey Cup. And a lot of times the teams are built to play better down the road, about maybe three quarters of the season in. So we don't know what BC has in mind, and I agree that they're very talented in that one aspect. But to your point, Mike, which you were trying to pull out of both of us, I'll bite on it. There is no team that has as much talent within the complete roster. In fact, if they had a weakness, it was kick returning. They solved that last week.
And also, like, to Ken's point earlier about the Riders' schedule, right? You try to bring up, like, oh, you know, look at the games. Look who the Lions actually beat. They beat Winnipeg, they beat Edmonton, and they beat Toronto at home. They lost on the road to Calgary, lost on the road to Toronto. And, I mean, they beat Winnipeg 27-20 last night, or 2 days ago. I mean, I don't see where's that impressive resume that would hold up against what the Riders have done. You know?
But if
the Riders hammered Toronto and they hammered Calgary.
But Mike, I think you basically sold the idea that Kent is suggesting on your own when you suggested that the quarterbacking has been solved for the most part. That doesn't make it easy for the defense, you know. So again, cumulatively speaking, the Saskatchewan Roughriders by far have the most talent of any of the teams in the CFL. When you go up and down the lineup. But there are a few people that, you know, you can throw in there. And Kent's is the secondary of BC. For me, it's the quarterback, Ricky Ray. All due respect to Durant, I still think Ricky Ray is a better quarterback. And as far as receiving is concerned, I wouldn't trade anybody in Saskatchewan for Chad Owens. So, you know, yeah.
Even over Weston Dressler?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. In my opinion, what they have with Chad Owens is a fighter, And I don't mean, I'm not trying to be funny when I say that, but he is. He's a fighter. He's a guy whose excitement and enthusiasm is part of what makes the Argos the Argos. It's what they sell. That's what the coaches want. They want their guys to fly. They want their guys to want the ball. And I'm not saying that Dressler doesn't want the ball. That's the last thing I'm saying. But I like Chad Owen's personality and his guts a little more than Dressler's. And I wouldn't trade him for any of the guys that Saskatchewan has, to be honest with you. And that's not just an Argo fan talking.
Yeah, I agree with that. No.
You know,
but
I
mean,
understand.
We're looking at that. I mean, yeah, in the East, let's be honest. Toronto's the best team in the East. They got the most talent. That's unquestioned, right? We're just talking about the West here. And
yeah,
I'm sorry I kind of went off because I'm kind of a Ryder fan. Like,
really?
You know, but
really?
Yeah.
Really?
So I was just kind of, you know, because it got a little personal there. I'm sorry about that, Ken, if we got to seem a little argumentative. But, no, I just – because, no, honestly, though, just from just trying to have, like, a non-biased view, I mean, honestly – I mean, do you guys expect anyone other than the Riders and the Argos and the Grey Cup?
Yeah, but you know, Mike, you're suffering from Rider-itis. You know what Rider-itis is?
No, what's
that? No matter how good your team is, you always have a little bit of doubt, and you still got to convince yourself that you're that good.
No, I'm 100% convinced on them. I don't see any doubt whatsoever with the Riders. I'm sorry.
Well,
when I look at the games, they physically dominate teams. By the fourth quarter, every team they've played this year just looks defeated. I've not seen single game where anybody in the fourth quarter looked like they were still in it. No one. So I don't
remember.
Mike,
we haven't even been through a third of the season yet. Well, maybe we just made a third, right? Some of the teams have played a third.
And look what's happened. All the teams have been just getting ran on because they're still afraid of the passing game. They know that George Cortez can put together a really potent passing game, especially when he's got all these receivers that he could use. Once the defenses start creeping that safety up and really start focusing on Corey Sheets, they're done. Darian Grant's going to have like 350 to 400 yard games at ease with no problem. The defenses right now, they're just not willing to commit to the run just yet. Once they do, George Cortez is going to completely destroy him. And that's why the Riders are not going to drop off. They're going to get better.
You. But can we play the rest of the season before we decide before we guarantee who's going to win the Grey Cup? You know, because there have been bigger surprises. I mean, put it this way. If Saskatchewan doesn't make it to the Grey Cup, I won't be surprised. But not because of Saskatchewan, but because of the Canadian Football League. The Canadian Football League, last year, as much as an Argo fan I am and how happy I am they won the Grey Cup, it was, and I keep talking about this, it's one pass in the end zone that either gets tipped or doesn't get tipped, whatever happened there in that last play. Regardless, it hits the numbers and doesn't get caught. That's the whole season right there. And quite frankly, Mike, that can happen to BC on a positive sense or Saskatchewan in a negative sense. You know, that's the beauty of the Canadian Football League. And more importantly, that's the beauty of football. One reception can make such a difference. You know,
well, when you look at the league, like the last 3-4 years, you see a pattern that just appeared like goes across the board, which is certain teams, for whatever reason, seem to have certain teams numbered. Like Hamilton, for whatever reason, always gets Montreal. You know, Toronto, I knew last year that they were going to win the East Final because all year you saw them. They either had beat them or they matchup-wise, they clearly look like they had the edge. Even those games that they lost when Jarius Jackson was starting, you could still tell that Montreal wasn't really that much better of a team. You could tell matchup-wise they could have them. So, whatever, we see this pattern continue. So no matter what, it's all about who plays who at what time. Like right now, Calgary's got BC's number. BC, if they're able to host the West Final, they seem to be able to beat the Riders at home all the time. So it's all about who, like, let's say Hamilton gets a third seed and they play Montreal in the East Semifinal. I'm willing to bet a good 2,000 or 3,000 on Hamilton to win that game. Just because I know the Tiger Cats, the last 4 or 5 years, you can look at it, go back and check. They've always, for whatever reason, even though they're not as talented, they always get Montreal. That's why I'm telling everyone right now, it's going to be Hamilton at Toronto in the East Final. I'm on the record for that now. You remember that, Frank.
Okay. No, well, you know, it's not a hard call to make right now anyway. But, you know, there's still, fortunately, there's still more games to be played. And I think there's a lot of hope out there for a lot of teams. And I do believe that I think the most important thing that one has to remember is that you know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. I mean, it is what it is. And as I said, Montreal could have won the Grey Cup last year. You know, it's all a break here, a break there can change a lot of teams' history. And but, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that the Saskatchewan is the most ready to win the Grey Cup of any of the teams in the CFL. There is no doubt about that. They went on a shopping spree. And, Kent, I joke every week on our other shows, who's watching the budget that they're you know, like, are they under the cap? You know, I don't know how Regina can still be under the cap.
it's an interesting situation what they got going on there.
Isn't it? Like, it sure seems to me like they should be over the cap, the money that they've spent. You'd almost think that because they're the home team, you know, they're going to ignore the cap. I don't know. But, you know, the commissioner said when the season started that everybody was under the cap. I just find it hard to believe. That's
weird, yeah, because I remember we talked about that a couple of weeks ago where it's like,
yeah,
you look at the Argos. The Argos maybe have, what, four or five guys we can think of that have maybe a high salary, and that's about it. But the Riders have at least eight or nine that they're paying a pretty nice contract to. So I don't know how they did it.
I don't know either. I don't know. Smoke and mirrors, I guess. Maybe the people who are checking their cap space are smoking the mirrors. I don't know. There's something going on there, man.
Think about, like, the Argos are paying Ray $400,000 a year, right? Isn't that what his contract's at?
Something like that, yeah.
And he's got like the Riders are paying Durant, I think, about $250,000. So there's another $150,000 in cap space, I guess, if you want to, you know. When you're like them in BC, like BC had to get rid of G-Roy Simon because of Lule got that $450,000 per year on his deal. So I guess that's why they're not paying Durant as much as some of the other quarterbacks in the league.
Well, you know, you get paid, you get paid or you don't get paid. And I think that's the real reason why Ray ended up in Toronto.
But isn't that kind of funny, though, that Durant gets paid, has the same contract as Buck Pierce? Did you know that? They both are getting $250,000. I just think that's kind of funny when you compare them. Like, if I'm Durant's agent, Durant's got to be, like, talking to his agent every single day. Like, are you kidding me? What's going on?
Well, you know, don't forget, signing a contract, and I think Kent can vouch for this, it's two parties. You don't get what you want. If you sign, you get what you need.
Yeah,
and you know it's all relative to everything else, right? All right, now.
Yeah, it's totally a two-way street.
So it's not a matter of dictating, that's for sure. And if you're Darian Durant, you know the team wants to win the Grey Cup, and we all know that winning a championship has some value to a player. The only question is how much.
I mean, he did take them to two Grey Cups, though. Which was pretty, you know. I mean, he didn't win, but still, that was pretty impressive.
No. I think you misunderstood the way I meant it. I meant for Durant, he wants another chance at a Grey Cup. And yeah. He knows being in Saskatchewan, he's got a great chance. And that's what I meant. More about him willing to give a little because he feels there's more to get down the road.
Right.
You know? Because, you know, every player, you know, I think I really believe this in their heart wants to wear a ring. That's what they want more than anything. They want to be able to flash the bling, you know.
Right.
It's what matters. Winning.
And getting paid.
Yeah, but I think for most players, I think getting paid is I don't know, Kent, you've gotten to know a lot of players and you've spent a lot of time. How important is winning to players? For every rule there's an exception. And it's not necessarily if, you know what I mean? Like, is it predominantly winning?
I would say with a lot of these guys, especially guys playing in the CFL, that the winning comes first. They all know that they're not going to have a retirement yacht on their salary that they're getting. So I think the winning comes first and there's not a lot of CFL players that are just cashing checks and, ho-hum, off to work I go. When things aren't happy in the win column, things aren't happy in the dressing room.
Hey, Kent, can you help me understand something else? Explain to me and the listeners this business about the commitment in September to contracts by teams of their players.
The whip, sorry?
I'm not really sure how it works, but supposedly in September is a time when the teams have to commit to their veterans.
I see, yes. There is a week of the CFL schedule that once you pass that week, even if you cut a veteran player, he still gets the full amount of his contract for that year.
And that happens in September, which means that's October, and then the Grey Cup's in the end of November. So, you know, it's pretty much halfway through the season. The team has to decide whether they want to pay a player, basically guarantee his salary for the rest of the year, or maybe we'll jettison him.
Yeah,
or release him.
If memory serves, right now, I believe it's after the 12th game. Before the 13th game, at least that's when it used to be. And then once you hit that point, even if you cut a veteran player, you're still paying them out.
So, for example, last year when the Argos cut Corey Boyd and set him loose, they were just doing Corey wasn't getting paid when he got cut at all.
I'm trying to remember what week he got.
Oh, he was out the fifth or sixth, around this time of year.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. No. Yeah. When he got cut, CFL salaries, same as NFL contracts. Now, NFL contracts is more with guaranteed money than what they got in Canada, but they're non-guaranteed contracts. And this is one of those features that I think resonates so well with the kind of the blue collar fan, is that if they do a poor job, they get fired just like any of those people sitting in the stands. You do a poor job on Friday, you might not have a job on Monday, and so I think that's a major connection point between football players and their fan base. Compared to, you know, baseball and hockey players that sign these contracts, and unless they retire like Kovalchuk, the team is pretty much anchored to it the rest of the way.
Until he goes to Russia. Okay, we've got a few minutes left. Kent, this week, Saskatchewan and Calgary, we already know who Mike says is going to win. What do you think the chances are for Calgary?
For Calgary to win, they need a big game from Cornish, and they need to win the turnover battle. When you look at Saskatchewan this year, they've at least been even in turnovers, and they've had fewer turnovers than their opponent in every game this year. So for Calgary to win, they have to come up with turnovers.
Mike, I'm sorry. I assumed that you would say that Saskatchewan would win. Was I right?
Oh, yeah. I didn't really catch Kent didn't really pick who he was going to – Who's going to win? You just sort of did you choose a team or?
No, I was just giving Calgary's keys to win. Kind of that's their key. They need to win the turnover battle. For Saskatchewan to win, another big game from Corey Sheets. I'll put it this way: if Corey Sheets outrushes John Cornish, then Saskatchewan wins. If it goes the other way, then I'll pick Calgary this week.
So who are you actually picking, though? I didn't.
I'm too much of a player guy to really pick an individual team. I try not to.
All right.
That's just not his style. So you said Saskatchewan. I'm gonna have fun with you, Mike. I'm gonna say Calgary.
All right.
Okay. And the reason I'm gonna say Calgary is because Saskatchewan's due for a loss. Toronto, Montreal. Keys, Kent.
Keys for Toronto. It's going to be if the Zach attack can happen again, if he can pull out another big game and showcase that arm, if they keep going downfield, I think Toronto's got a great shot at winning. Montreal, it's going to be a regroup week for them. Their defense is fantastic and has been pretty strong all year. I think if Jim Pop can put something into place and kind of calm that offense down, that's what they're going to need to win.
Mike?
Yeah, is Ricky Ray out? I thought he was starting.
No, he's probably going to be in. Kent wasn't aware. Kent's not in Canada. Ricky Ray's probably going to suit up. But go ahead.
I'm picking Toronto.
We
got to
go.
Yep.
I'm saying Toronto too. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Rouge Radio, Candid Frank Live on Rouge Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Talk to you later. Have a great weekend, you guys. And thanks, Kent.
Thanks, Frank. Take care.
You too, my man.